Tauranga's city commissioners have signed off on a $2 billion plan, which it's hoped will breathe some much-needed life and vibrancy into the country's fifth-largest and fastest-growing city. The city's CBD has been littered with vacant shops and residents, and visitors tend to flock to the nearby Mount. The new revitalisation plan will see the development of 8 different precincts, along with new apartments and commercial buildings. It's an ambitious plan which relies a lot on a lot of private investment, but should a council governed by commissioners, not elected representatives, be driving decisions for ratepayers on the long-term future of the city. To discuss, we welcome the Council's Commission Chair, Anne Tolley. Morena, Anne.
Good morning, Catherine.
And welcome also to the President of the Mount Residents and Ratepayers Association and Tauranga Ratepayers Alliance, spokesperson Michael O'Neill. Hello, Michael.
Good morning.
Good to talk. Now, first, let's just get Anne's take on the decisions that have been made here and why. You said the revitalisation is absolutely critical. Run us through this plan.
Yes, so you adequately described what downtown Tauranga City looked like when the commission was appointed. So years of neglect and really no connection to the magnificent waterfront. There's cars parked all over it. And so we went out to the community with wanting to know from the community, you know, what they felt about it. We'd seen big malls growing up around in the different new subdivisions. And as you say, the Mount Shopping Centre is really vibrant. But the community told us very clearly that they wanted us to develop a vibrant city centre. And so that's what we've been working on, along with, as you say, the private sector. A lot of what is planned for the CBD relies on the private sector. And they were really waiting for a bit of certainty from the council. So the council itself owns a big chunk of land in the middle of the CBD. It had suffered from leaky buildings. In 2014, they discovered toxic black mould in the buildings. But council had dithered and not made a decision as to where it was going to move to, had looked at several places, et cetera, et cetera. So indecision meant that the private sector then was reluctant to invest too. And the whole thing just got worse and worse.
So this predates the time of the commissioners being brought in.
Absolutely.
Okay, you've gone ahead and pushed go on it. Just explain to people not familiar with it a little bit more about what will happen by virtue of private investment, but also some council involvement or decision making.
So the first thing that the commissioners made a decision on was where to actually place the council administration offices, and we made a decision to put those in the middle of Devonport Road, a brand new building. It's a green six-star building, so showing a bit of leadership from a carbon emissions reduction point of view, but also putting 700 people on a daily basis in the middle of the city. Then we turned our attention to the civic centre. We had to rebuild the library and community centre, but we have a big area of land there, and we went out and consulted with the community on a big civic centre plan, about $303 million, building not only a library and community centre, but a museum, an exhibition centre, connecting it down to the waterfront, what we're calling a civic whare, which is a sort of a modern day town hall. And then some other land at the top of that into a hotel, conference centre and performing arts centre. Now, what's happened since that's been confirmed, and we've after consulting with ratepayers, we've promised that the rates will only pay for half of that. We'll look to raise the rest of the funds from a variety of outside places. Then we've had our economic development then working with the private sector, who have now confirmed about $1.2 billion worth of private investment into the city.
Okay.
As you say, we've got we've identified the whole CBD, because it's not just about the centre of the CBD. And we're working with the University of Waikato on a knowledge precinct. There's a historic precinct, so we're working quite widely. It's not just the commission making these decisions. We're working quite widely with different sections of the community and
Okay.
different interests.
There are, but there are things that could go wrong as well. And
Oh,
let's well
absolutely,
let's
absolutely.
just look at some of the issues that need to be checked. I think it's the first council to use the government's infrastructure fund as well.
Yes.
But obviously, people are saying, what are the implications for rates here of grand projects like this? The private sector involvement will deliver or won't deliver based on its interests, and then what happens to rates trajectory? Because I think you've had recent rates rises of an average of about 13.7%, much of it to fund key infrastructure projects. Now, that's a hefty increase. What's the forward trajectory?
So the long-term plan that we put in place, which was our first role when we came in as a commission, yes, we certainly increased the rates substantially. I think it was a 22% rate increase that first lot, and then last year was 13.7. But what we've also done is restructure who pays for what. And what we found was that the residents were actually bearing a huge share of the burden, even though the rates hadn't gone up to keep pace to manage growth, but still the residents were being were really being hard hit. So we've been reshaping the rates load, if you like. So the commercial sector, we've been gradually increasing that. We're now looking at the industrial sector. We've increased our development contributions significantly, so to try and get growth paying for growth. But we've got a huge job ahead of us because the city has really not managed growth, and the current residents have suffered, and we have a huge deficit
Okay.
of community infrastructure.
Audit New Zealand's highlighted concerns about the civic precinct plans and the way infrastructure projects are being funded. Do you know what the basis of their concerns are, and what's your response to their concerns?
Sorry, I didn't hear who. I didn't hear that,
Audit
who it is.
Audit New Zealand has highlighted concerns.
So yes, well, because we've only committed half the 300 million through the long-term plan amendment, Audit New Zealand have quite rightly said, well, the plan sounds great and you've got half the funding, but the other half of the funding isn't yet secured. And that's right, because we've promised the ratepayers we would look outside for outside investment. So that's there's a number of large community trusts, etc. We'll be going to the government funding, the lotteries, etc., etc. And so we can't, in the plan, we can't show where that 150 odd million is coming from. So we've had those conversations with audit, and that's absolutely right. But what we've said to the community is no project will go ahead unless it has a business case and the funding is confirmed.
Can it go ahead in piecemeal fashion? Can it go ahead piece by piece? You might not get the whole plan, but you might get some of it. Or does that undermine the very private sector investment that you're talking about?
Yeah, it does, and in fact, that's sort of the history of Tauranga, is that they have a big plan and then they do it bit by bit and
Okay.
they never get past the first bit.
So just
Yeah.
clarify what the level of commitment is here as of today by ratepayers.
Well, the ratepayers have.
It is committed. It is the
Yes,
button
it is.
has
It
been
is.
pushed on go.
Well, no, it's not pushed on go. It's in the long-term plan. So
Okay.
it's in the funding. The long-term plan is a budget for the next 10 years, and the 150 million of ratepayers' funding is sitting in that, and awaiting the confirmation of the other 150 million.
Thank you, Anne. Let's come to Michael O'Neill, as I said, President of the Mount Residents and Ratepayers Association, also Tauranga Ratepayers Alliance spokesperson. What's your reaction, Michael, to where the commissioners have got to, effectively acting as the council, picking up what the council had started, but making decisions as commissioners, not elected members? And in principle, do you have an issue with that, or are they getting on with
Oh,
something that needs to be got on with?
I think most of the city has an issue with that. This is a council. The commissioners have been quite clear that and in their letter to the minister that they don't trust locals to elect the right people to run the city. This is the fifth largest city in the country. The city is currently being driven by commissioners who are driving an unconsulted growth agenda, and they haven't actually asked the people if they want this growth and if we can afford this sort of growth. I mean, to put the pressure in its entirety, we have a 10-year plan for sure, but it seems to be there seem to be additionals every day or every week being added to it. So let's just have a look at the big picture. The commissioners are saying that they want to have an Olympic swimming pool at Moorea Park. They want to relocate the Speedway from Bayfair. They want a new stadium, a massive new stadium in the Domain. They want to relocate the race course and do massive changes into that area. Then there's the museum and the exhibition centre. They have a redevelopment plan for the waterfront, but the elephant in the room in that regard is a railway line, the main trunk line that runs right through the centre of town. They also are planning major changes to a number of sports facilities. We're talking not just 300 million, but probably in the billions. And as a ratepayers association, I mean, you'd think that the council would spend a lot of time consulting with ratepayers organisations. We have a membership of over 2,000 people.
Ratepayers associations associations do often have very much a focus on the rates, as well as representing the wider interests of ratepayers. They are often very focused on rising rates, and they are often leery of what might be called vanity projects or new projects. Forgive the stereotyping, but yeah. Can you clarify where yours comes from? You mentioned, can you afford the growth? And Tolly's point was the growth to some extent has already happened to Tauranga, and it is happening, and it's people moving to the region. Could you come from first principles? Are there some projects here that you think are good and would be good for the city, and is it a case that it's just too big a cake?
I think they're all good for the city, let's be honest with that. Well, primarily most of them are good for the city. I don't think we actually need a Olympic swimming pool complex at Memorial Park. We could redevelop the one at the Bay Fair. And I don't think we need to have a new stadium in the Domain, although it'd be lovely to have. We do have a stadium, I mean, in the central business district where the Domain is, parking would always be an issue, whereas the stadium we have out at Bay Fair could be redeveloped, and it has ample parking. So there are some projects there that And I don't agree with the racecourse redevelopment at the moment either. I don't think I've seen a decent business plan to support that. But certainly the waterfront redevelopment, realigning the CBD away from retail. I think retail will always struggle in that area because of parking costs, parking fees, and the beauty of the other four main shopping centres, mainly Tauriko, Papamoa Plaza, Bayfair, Mount Maunganui and Grierton, where parking's free and the shopping is far more pleasant than what you'd get downtown in the CBD. So let's look at the CBD more as a business centre and entertainment centre rather than a retail centre.
What are your real reservations in the heart of hearts? You've given some individual projects that may or may not have a business case you agree with, but when looking at the whole package in the 10-year long-term plan, what are your real reservations about this?
The amount of change that's been planned and the impact that will have on. I mean, look at the graphics of Tauranga. We still are a very strong centre for retirees who come into the city on limited budgets, and who many of who have been here for a long time may be asset rich, but they are cash poor. So we've really got to remember that that we have a demographics in this city that will struggle with huge rate rises. I mean, if they were kept to the cost of inflation, I think the residents would be happy. But to be having 10 to 15% year on year, rate rises is becoming unaffordable for many.
So, Anthony, I guess this is the other thing, just coming back to you. Typically, this would go to a vote. And councils being councils, there'd be the sort of the fiscal hawks and the fiscal doves, and there'd be the, you know, those who love the great grand plans and others who say you should just fix the pipes, please. The difference here is that democratic mechanism isn't happening in Tauranga at the moment. And is a plan on this scale appropriate in that context?
Well, the reality is the reason that we're there is because that thinking has dominated for the last 20 years. And so the city hasn't been able to invest to manage the growth that's been happening. So we have arterial roads now absolutely choked up because they were designed for a population of 70,000 and we've now got 152,000 and they haven't had any change. We've got sports clubs, recreation for the people who live there, whilst there is a large retiree population, there's also a growing number of families growing up and working in this really vibrant city. And they've been asking for more facilities as they grow over the last 10 to 14 years. And then on top of that, we have an extra about 3,000 new people coming in every year that need housing, that need access to facilities. So we're trying to play catch up and we're trying to manage the growth that is continuing to happen. And it's interesting, lots of people have said to us, and because we have really tried to be out communicating and consulting and engaging the public in all of these plans, and some people have said to us, you know, we've just got to stop growing. We don't want to grow anymore. You cannot stop growth. Yeah. There is no mechanism to stop it. The best thing you can do is invest and manage it so that you keep the quality of life for the people that are there. And that's really the focus of the commission.
You can't stop progress, as Muriel's dad said.
yes, that's right.
Just on the funding, though, because I'm just thinking of the cost blowouts in one stadium in Christchurch. Just on the funding, just clarify again, do you know how much you're getting from central government funds and whether is that locked in or not?
No. We're just with the Civic Centre at the moment. So the stadium is still going through the business case. It's not confirmed. We've made it clear that the right place for it would be on the domain, but we're a long way yet from confirming that would happen.
But when it comes to the funding of that long-term plan, just again break down for me what ratepayers are up for and then what's dependent on government coming to the party and private investment coming to the party.
Well, so the current long-term plan has $150 million of ratepayers' money over the next 6 to 8 years invested in that civic centre,
right.
That's the library, etc. Then we are seeking $150 million. We started talking with, we have a community trust, we have a number of large funders locally, and we're looking at applications for lotteries, etc.
So really a lot of what is proposed here depends on the private investment, doesn't it? The big bucks.
Yes, it does. Absolutely.
And thank you, and thanks very much to Michael O'Neill as well. 8:30 to 10, that was Anne Tolley there of the Tauranga Council, the Commission Chair.